As I said, tonight I'm going to talk about step 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. So by now, most of you, if not all of you, know that just by staying away from your addiction of choice doesn't mean you have a happy, fulfilling life at all, at all. And both the 12 steps and the Buddhist teachings, I just think they complement each other so amazingly. They address this ongoing awareness and fulfillment. And when he was leading the meditation, you know, this whole thing about awareness, being aware. So much of our lives, it's scary actually, are walking like in a sleepwalking kind of a way. Do you ever have that? Like you're walking and you go, how did I get here? Where was I? Usually traveling down some road of some unimportant thought over and over, or fantasy was mine. That was when I was using fantasy was my big getaway, to the point where I was so connected with my fantasies that once I told a friend, I really like you so much that I'm going to give you one of my fantasies and I won't fantasize it while you're using it. Do you see where there is something that is not totally sane when we're using? Yeah, I thought I was being so kind and she looked at me like I was crazy, which was appropriate. So the word continued is really key. And in one self-help book, I don't remember which one it was, it says, repetition is the only form of permanence that nature can achieve. Repetition. Repetition. So once we have sort of dealt with the past, we have to enter the present. And we need to do some more in terms of a daily review about our actions, both positive and negative. Sometimes the way people talk about the program is you have to keep looking at what's wrong, what you have to fix, what you have to clean up. And I also think it's really important to look and see what's right. What am I doing right? What am I doing well? What am I doing kindly? And to see the good feeling that comes from doing kindness. I mean, it's a win-win. People agree with that? Or it's not doing it for somebody else. I mean, we can selfishly be kind, but it's so kind. I don't mean selfishly that should be our motivation. It's just sort of the outcome. So in truth, every moment is a beginning. Every moment is a beginning. Even when we're in the midst of a thought, even when we're in the midst of saying something, if we're watching, we have the capability of saying, okay, I want to continue with this, or oops, this is not a good place to be. If we're paying attention, I know I've had that. I can be on the tirade of blah, 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 and all of a sudden, well, skip that. Let's start all over again. And I've said that to friends at times. Can we start all over again? And it's easier to start all over again when you're only this much into it than when you're years into it. So there's paying attention. And although step 10 is taken after kind of a lot of work, this being mindful of our actions and our thoughts and our behavior, it can start as soon as we just even have the littlest bit of being awake. We don't have to wait until we've done all the other steps to wake up and be aware. As a matter of fact, I think, when you see what it was in your life, I wasn't taking steps. Well, actually, my early sponsors had a problem with me because I would want to rush to step 11. You know, I hadn't really done step one totally, but I wanted to go where all the big guys were, you know, sitting like this. That looked really good to me. But from the moment we put everything down, we have this capability of being aware. And then it's, are we willing to do something about it? And that takes some training, not just looking and seeing our behavior and going, oh my God, I can't believe I did that again. But, uh-oh, what can I do to do it differently this time or next time? Because habits get us deeply entrenched. That's part of the good news is when we start to make positive habits, they are on automatic also. Have you? For me, I must say, sobriety is a habit. I don't have a problem saying no, thank you. But it took some doing in the beginning because I would look at it and go, what am I supposed to say here? But it becomes a habit. The other place where we get taken aback is we get so enchanted by our own stories of who other people are, what they did to us, who we should be. And we're the greatest storytellers. Actually, I think it would be fun if we made a book of everybody here and everybody told their favorite story about themselves. And we printed it out. A lot of them would look kind of alike, I think. But we get so involved in, what's that phrase? This is the kind of person that I am. This is the kind of person that I am. As if we're not, we are a product of our conditioning for sure. But we certainly have the potential to make changes. I don't think any of us would be here in this room on a night like tonight if we didn't have this ability to change course when we saw we were going in the wrong direction. I mean, maybe we had to, smash up a few cars before we saw we were going in the wrong direction, but still, here we are. So meditative attention, it's an art. It's an acquired skill, and it brings clarity and an intelligence as we can see more closely into the true nature of things, not just our story. Think of the people that you think you know very, very well. Very well. You can almost finish their sentences. What if next time you saw this person, you pretended you didn't know them? You might be so surprised to find other parts of them that you just don't pay attention to. And if we can stop the story of who we are, who I am, and what's wrong with me or what's right with me, I get surprised. Why not have a surprise party for us all and just let us be? So with all the variety of techniques in the Buddhist meditation, the art of attention is a common thread underpinning them all. Paying attention. And we think we're paying attention a lot of the time. Just check that out for yourself over the week. So the important ubiquitousness of this is illustrated in a Zen story that I often repeat. So of course, guess what? I'm going to repeat it again. A monk once asked his teacher, "What is the fundamental teaching in Buddhism?" And the master replied, "Attention." The student, dissatisfied with the answer, said, "I wasn't talking about attention, but I was wanting to know the essential teaching in Buddhism." And the master replied, "Attention, attention, attention." So it can be appreciated that an essence of Buddhist practice is to be found in the word attention. Because if you're not paying attention to what is unfolding in the here and now, you're lost in some preconceived idea of what's happening. So that's so important to keep in mind. And we need to continue to investigate. We need to continue to recognize how we still make mistakes. The undercover mistakes are the ones that we don't realize are mistakes. We just think, that's just the way I do things, without knowing, without taking in what the impact that can have on the people around us. I know my family at different times when I finally started to get that I wasn't the center of everybody else's universe, and I started to get that I was like an untamed animal in a way, even though I looked very sophisticated, you know, with the long nails and the cigarettes and the wine glass. But they were so grateful when I started to wake up and find out, oh, that they were there also. It wasn't just me. So we continue to look with compassion and courage about how we hurt ourselves and how we hurt others, because we do both. If we don't do this, if we don't take these steps, step four, now coming into 10, the addiction is looming behind us like an angry wolf. And somehow that idea of like that thing is sitting right there, and if I'm not continuously working some form of program or spiritual opening or whatever is important to you, if I'm not doing something to see what's going on and to make the changes, this thing is ready to get me in the butt. And it can happen so easily. You don't have to raise your hand if you don't want to, but, and we may be all here with different addictions. Anybody here ever have a slip? So some of us here know that just because we sign on, go to a meeting, doesn't mean that we don't have to keep on doing the work. Because I know when I would sit in the meeting, I felt very safe when they didn't serve alcohol in the meetings. But when I got out of the meeting, that's when the work started. That's when it started. So what does it mean to take inventory? So there are many, many guidelines for this in many different ways. And I'm going to explore this from the point of view of the Buddhist teachings and part of a sutta of that, the AA teachings and the five precepts. So overall, this is what the Buddha said, and it's a really good headline banner for this. Wisdom starts with asking the question, what, when I do it, will lead to my long-term welfare and happiness and to the happiness of others? I mean, what would that be like before you went and did something? Will this lead to my happiness and the happiness of others? It's a simple question. But it could help us say, I don't think I'm going to do that right now. So there's a sutta where the Buddha is teaching his son Rahula. I wonder if he ever just played games with him, you know? What do you think, Rahula? What is a mirror for? For reflection, sir. In the same way, Rahula, bodily actions, verbal actions, mental actions are to be done with repeated reflection. Why are we doing this? Looking in the mirror. Taking time out, not... It's interesting, especially in this society, I think it's for men too, not just women. We use the mirror for so many things that have to do with vanity and external appearance. Do you ever get up in a good mood and, you know, you go to the mirror and you look in the mirror and you go, ugh, it's going to be a lousy day. Oh, good, it's not just me. Yeah, as if the mirror is going to... But our actions, the mirror of our actions will really tell us if it's going to be, quote unquote, a good day. But now we're looking at the inward appearance, so to speak, that kind of a mirror. As you probably know, or maybe you don't, but in the suttas, because it was an oral tradition, there are many, many repetitions that can go on and on and on. And actually, repetition helps us remember. So I'm going to give a basic, and then I'll tell you what's repeated. So here's part of what the Buddha said to his son Rahula, which is kind of like an ongoing 10th step. Quote, whenever you want to do a bodily action or a verbal action or a mental action, okay, an action, you should reflect on it. This bodily action I want to do, would it lead to self-affliction, to the affliction of others, or to both? And this is I don't remember my mommy teaching me this exactly. She taught me to be nice, but not in this depth. Would it be an unskillful bodily action with painful consequences, painful results? And then he says to his son, if on reflection you know that it would lead to self-affliction or to the affliction of others or both, it would be unskillful action with painful consequences, painful results, and any body action of that sort is absolutely unfit for you to do. So he's teaching his son, think it through. Take a moment to think it through. And then he says, but if on reflection you know that it would not cause any affliction, and that it would be skillful with pleasant consequences, pleasant results, then any bodily action of that sort is fit for you to do. So the Buddha wasn't just saying, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. He's also saying, hey, there are some things that are really good to do. They'll make you happy. I mean, my brother, when I first was really in the beginning getting involved, and he said, but, you know, Sandra, why are you involved with something that's all about suffering? I said, well, it's partly about suffering, but it's mostly about the release from suffering. And that's what this is all about. We want to get free. And then he says, not only when you want to do an action, that's what I said before, but while you are doing an action, he adds, similar to the 10th step, reflect on it the same way. If it's going to lead to affliction, you know, you can stop it midway. It's a little harder. And then at the end, if you look back, you could say, oh, that was not cool. And you could sort of, he didn't say that exactly, but, and then you could decide, I'm just not going to do that anymore. Are we paying attention? Or are we sleepwalking through most of our lives? I just want to exercise that. And again, if something was skillful and had pleasant consequences, it's good to see that. It's good to feel good about that. Because when you feel good about something, you kind of want to do it again. And that's how we learn. So that's a training in the skill with shifting with our attitudes. So much of what we do physically feels like it's automatic. But it usually started with something mental going on. So we really got to check that out. So we see that the practice of sila, S-I-L-A, ethics, is twofold. And very often it's said that the Buddha and a lot of the teachers in the East, before they actually taught meditation, they would teach ethics. You know, here, somehow or other, all the Buddhist teachings got encapsulated into sit for half an hour, you know. And more, there's more teaching of the teachings, which I think is so important. So it's twofold, to resolve to do no harm and to restrain yourself about to do something that's not kind or wholesome. Or resolve not to do it again. You know, resolve and restrain. So we can think of, okay, but what does harm, what doesn't do harm? And it's good to have some guidelines. It's always good to have some guidelines. The underlying one that's there for everything is the mindfulness. Because if you don't have some awareness, you're not even going to be aware of what you're doing or not doing. You're just on automatic. So then mindful, we want to look at that a little more. To start to become mindful of our intentions. Do you ask yourself often, ever, what's my intention in doing this? I think I'll call so-and-so. Why am I calling so-and-so? That's not to say don't call, but why am I calling? Because it's so easy. It might be I'm calling because I haven't heard from him or her in a long time, want to connect. And underneath that, it might be, well, I'm actually worried, or underneath that could be, I guess he or she isn't thinking about me anymore. Maybe I need to remind them I'm alive. Underneath that, maybe, oh God, nobody likes me. I got to make sure I have a friend. You know, if you start to really look, it's so interesting. We're so interesting. Mindful of the intention. Mindful of the effect of our words and actions on other people. I'm better at this now. I mean, I don't have to bump into this as much, but still, occasionally. How many times I would say to either a beloved one, my husband, family, or friends, I didn't think that would hurt your feelings. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. You know, and they would have, my husband, bless him, would say, but sometimes you pay attention to who's on the other side. You need to pay attention. Once we start to do this a little more, we will become more likely to see the connection between our thoughts, words, deeds, and our relationships. We'll start to understand them better. We may even start to see the other person as a real human being and not just something supposed to feed our needs and egos and make wiser choices. A word about taking personal inventory in regard to ourselves. There are so many ways we can personally injure ourselves. So many ways. What do you think it would be like if somebody recorded? Nowadays, they can implant all these things in us. It's kind of scary. If there was a recorder planted in here of the way you talk to yourself, and you had to play it back at night and listen to it. I personally could not let a friend talk to me the way I can talk to myself. I'm better at that. No, I must say thank you. We can be so very mean. So for example, if somebody calls you somebody calls you up and says, I just want to let you know, you are a piece of shit. Oh, thank you so much for calling. You made my day. But how many times are we saying that in our own minds? Maybe not that particular word, but how many times that we pierce our own hearts with being mean? And we're not even aware of it because it's just so automatic. So it takes a combination of courage. Everybody's leaving. Okay, it takes a combination of courage and compassion. It takes courage to make changes. It takes compassion when we start to open up and really see our thoughts and really look at our actions. Courage and compassion. I think they go together so importantly. And I know when I first heard the word compassion a lot, you know what? I said, oh, give me a break with the compassion. It felt new agey, compassion. It's the only way to live, with compassion. It's one of my favorite words now. So instead of yuck and self-punishment when we see ourselves reacting in a harmful way or a selfish way, we should be happy that we see it. Because then we can make a change. If we didn't see it, we couldn't make a change. So that's the good news when you catch yourself. But all too often we go, oh my God, I'm a terrible person. Look what I said. Look what I did. I'm so mean. So next time you catch yourself, maybe be happy. Wow, I caught one. I caught 2, 5, 12. So knowing one's fault is a good start. But we need humility and honesty and patience to make some corrections. It doesn't happen automatically, right? I mean, have you seen that for yourself? Like, oh, I really don't want to do this anymore. I don't like the way I just behaved. And then, why can't I stop doing this? My God, 10 years later, I'm still doing it, you know? Patience, honesty, humility. So the Buddha laid down some precepts as guidelines. And we'll take them later tonight before we end. But most retreats, they will always start with taking the precepts. So everybody's kind of on the same page. And one is to refrain from killing, to refrain from harming, to refrain from harming. The precept to refrain from taking that which is not offered. You could say not stealing, but I don't think many of us go out and actually steal. But when you look at the subtlety of to not take that which is not offered, that's another kind of take on it. To refrain from false speech, to refrain from false and hurtful speech. That's one of the hardest ones. I know I'm not going to go around killing anybody. But when I start to watch the talking, inner and outer, to refrain from sexual misconduct. So you have to ask yourself, each of us, you know, for us, what is misconduct in my particular lifestyle? And it's interesting when you just take time to reflect on that, you can start to deepen your connection with whoever your one love person is, but also your connection with yourself. To refrain from sexual misconduct. And to refrain from substances that cause heedlessness and non-awareness. I think most of us here are working on that one, maybe doing pretty well. So these precepts, they offer us powerful guidelines for our behavior. You know, a quick little checklist for living in harmony with ourselves and with others. And when we do them, when we take them, there's a conscious choice to refrain from behavior that creates more confusion and fear. A conscious choice. The Buddha said at one point, everything rests on the tip of intention. And what would it be like if you got up every morning with the intention to not cause any pain? You know, the intention to watch your speech. Without the intention, our habits take over. That's just normal. But just offering that. As we incorporate these precepts into our lives, our daily lives, as we incorporate these intentions into our lives, we begin to develop a spiritual backbone. When I first went into my first AA meeting, I thought, oh my God, I don't know if I can really do this. And then 40 years later, I think I can do this, you know. But it takes some doing, it takes some getting used to it. When we start to develop a view that's wider than just answering our own personal needs, we start to connect more with the other. Almost that sense of like, oh, I am the other for the other person. So we're not always just the subject. You know, sometimes we're the object. To take all of this in. Start to move out of this self-centered preoccupation. It is such a joy to be out of the prison of self-centeredness. Even if it's just for a little break, you know, a little vacation, it feels so good. And the harming of ourselves and others, you know, that becomes more refined. We get stronger at resolve, it gets stronger at restraint. So I think all of us would say, you know, offhand, oh yeah, I think it's a good idea to live with these precepts. Yeah, okay, I'm for it. And it is a good idea. But it takes some doing, moment to moment, relationship to relationship. So it's worth something for all of us to think of. And for tonight, before Cliff talks, I invite you to take the precepts with me, okay? And we'll take them both as a shall not and a shall, okay? Both ways. Okay, so I will say it and you repeat it after me. How's that? Okay. And one last thing. Teaching of the Buddha, the path to enlightenment. The Buddha said, it sounds so easy, do not do anything harmful, do only what is good. Purify and train your own mind. I undertake the precept to refrain from killing. I undertake the precept. I undertake the precept to have respect for all of life. I undertake the precept. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not offered. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not offered. I undertake the precept to cultivate generosity in every way possible. I undertake the precept to cultivate generosity in every way possible. I undertake the precept to refrain from sexual misconduct. Sexual misconduct. I undertake the precept to use sexuality as a gateway to intimacy and expression of love. I undertake the precept to use sexuality as a gateway to intimacy and expression of love. I undertake the precept to refrain from false, harmful, or reckless speech. Take the precept to refrain from false, harmful, reckless speech. This is long now. I undertake the precept to remain sensitive to the potential impact of all communication and use speech to heal. I undertake the precept to remain sensitive to the potential impact of all communication and use speech to heal. I undertake the precept to refrain from intoxicants that cloud the mind and cause heedless behavior. I undertake the precept to refrain from intoxicants that cloud the mind and cause heedless behavior. I undertake the precept to have a commitment to a mind that sees the truth. I undertake the commitment to a mind that sees the truth. So let's just take a minute and just sit in silence. There's been a lot said. And just see what comes up for you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.